You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Each Everton goal like a nail into the cross on Sunday, Easter Sunday, as Manchester United are beaten 4-0 by Everton in the Premier League. Hello and welcome to Series 4, Episode 37 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast with your hosts Harry Robinson and Jack Tate, back to a almost normal format after a few weeks of difference. I'm in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Jack is in Cape Town, South Africa. So a truly international episode, this one. We're also talking about a 3-0 loss to Barcelona midweek. We're out of the Champions League. Looks like we're probably not going to make top four and not achieve Champions League in that way either. So we're talking all of that, as well as our usual extensive regular youth loan and women's roundup. Jack, I think it's best to start off with not talking about the fact that we ran much less than Everton, not talking about the specific goals and specific mistakes from various players, and far too many players in the Everton game or the Barcelona game, but instead talking about kind of some more general issues. The fact that for so many years, United have now been the club that has underperformed more than any other in the Premier League, probably for the past five or six seasons, maybe with one exception last season. And that's a spell, I think, undeniably caused by the club management, not just by the manager himself, whether that be David Moyes, Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and also by the players who have been there in that time, the players who have been there for the last half a decade, who have underperformed and now have nowhere to hide. Mourinho and Van Gaal gave these players an excuse. They hid them. They protected them behind a shield of arrogance and entertaining press conferences. But now there's nowhere to hide their lack of application.
There was so many distractions with those other managers, I think, that you're right, it kind of hid a lot of their flaws. But there's nowhere to hide for them now. Ole has created an environment and been so public about creating an environment that gives these players no excuses to be underperforming now. We are trying to play more attacking football, which was supposedly the issue under Mourinho. We aren't playing such turgid, boring possession football as we were under Van Gaal. You know, we have a culture at the club now under Ole that isn't toxic like it was under Mourinho. There are no more excuses for all of these players. And I was having this conversation on Twitter with people earlier, because in situations like this, when we do go through a bit of a crisis, and that is what we're in at the moment, I think, there is just people want to jump to either side of the debate. You know, it's all on the players or it's all on the management. And it's just ridiculous. It happens every single time we lose a few games. And the reality of it is, it's never all down to either just the manager or just the players. It's always a combination of both. And you throw in everything that goes on behind the scenes into that as well, all the way up to Ed Woodward and the Glazers, because every single person involved in the club is responsible for the position that we find ourselves in now.
Yeah. Sunday was a low point, even in comparison to all the other low points we've had to suffer through over the last few
100%.
Years. A 4-0 loss for Manchester United in the Premier League is ridiculous, particularly to a team outside of the top six. I think it's the first time we've lost by that scoreline to a team outside of the top six since 5-0 against Newcastle back in the 90s. It's just truly, truly shocking. And I think if we go back to the Solskjaer appointment, I don't want to kind of use hindsight too much in this, because I think that's slightly unfair. I think we were both wary at the time. I said I thought it might have taken balls to do it that early, and I guess if things had continued in good form, I would still think that. So I don't want to criticise too much, because hindsight is a fantastic thing to have. But even so, we all recognise that the appointment of Solskjaer permanently wasn't necessary at the time. And with a caretaker, why should you ever be rushed into a decision? Why ever take away your options? Why ever take the pressure off the manager and off the players? Because there's no doubt that is partly what was driving on the players and driving on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his management team to in that fantastic spell of 9 consecutive away wins, whatever. Miguel Delaney did a good thread on this during the game. He said one source has said that Woodward is too concerned with headlines, whereas the phrase in the City boardroom is, in Catalan, put your head in the fridge. And every manager has been a response to the last one, and not an appointment that stems from an identity. We're looking back in hindsight, but the Solskjaer appointment seems like the Solskjaer appointment at that time is certainly a mistake. I think we all slightly confused by the timing of it.
Well, yeah, and if every appointment of each manager is as a response to the one that comes before it, the Solskjaer one fits into that mould as well, because you had David Moyes, who was not unheralded completely, but compared to some of the other managers we were being linked with after Sir Alex retired, Moyes was a relatively unheralded name. Then we go the complete opposite way and get one of the most decorated managers from the last 20 or 30 years in Van Gaal, who's very, very big on the philosophy and making sure that we played in a certain way. And then in response to that debacle, you then go to the ultimate pragmatist in Jose Mourinho, who doesn't really care about how the job gets done as long as the job gets done somehow. And then the complaint about Mourinho was that he didn't understand the club properly and that things had gone so toxic to a point where it just wasn't representing what Manchester United was about. And so you go the complete opposite way and appoint someone who has as much knowledge of what Manchester United is about as any person who would be in the running for the job.
I think we should mention Mourinho. I don't think there's much doubt that Mourinho, I remember him calling Pogba the virus in the dressing room, but I don't think there's much doubt that Mourinho was the virus in the dressing room. But there is certainly an element of toxicity in this United dressing room that has been maintained under Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho, and we'll see if it's maintained under Solskjaer this summer. And it's not just Paul Pogba, and it's not just, the social media giants like Jesse Lingard and stuff. It was before Pogba, it was players like Angel Di Maria, and there's just a culture of underperforming in this Manchester United squad that has lasted through all the four permanent managers now since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. And I think
there's a softness in the dressing room, which is part of the problem. We seem to accept mediocrity too easily, and you can see it when we go a goal down, despite the fact that we've actually had some decent comebacks in a lot of these games. But you can see, as soon as we concede a goal, there's no leader on the pitch. I think that's what we're struggling with at the moment. All of our leaders, or the players that we think should be leaders, are leaders more simply through the fact that they are good players rather than the way that they actually galvanise those around them. And you think about, probably, in my opinion anyway, probably the best leader that we've had in the sort of in my lifetime anyway, it's probably Roy Keane. Roy Keane was the kind of player where, even if he wasn't having a great game, the way that he managed to galvanise those around him made him a massive asset on the pitch, even when he wasn't playing at his best. There is no one like that in our team at the moment. There is no one who can take charge, who can rally this team when going gets tough. And unless some of our best players end up taking the ball by the horns and doing everything themselves, there really is no one on our team who is able to galvanise people like that. That is, I think, a massive thing that we're missing, because we seem to just accept mediocrity too much. And there should be someone in that dressing room who is giving everyone a complete bollocking any time we come in at half time after a performance like that against Everton.
But it was kind of summed up in the fact that David De Gea handed the captain's armband to Ashley Young when he came onto the pitch as sub. it's just there is no captain there. Manchester United do not have a captain in their dressing room, and I think I think to be fair that the role of the captain has decreased in importance over the last few years in football, and you see far less of those enforcer players, particularly in midfield. You don't get the Roy Keane mold player anymore. You don't get the Patrick Vieira, whatever. You don't even get the Steven Gerrard type player. So I think it's worth keeping that in mind. But still, you see the captains of the great clubs over the past decade, Sergio Ramos at Real Madrid. You have to have more than one leader in your dressing room, not even just the captain. You look at Real Madrid and you know that, I'm not talking now, I'm talking in the Real Madrid team that won three consecutive European Cups. You've got Sergio Ramos as captain, keeping the standards up. But then you know that the players in the rest of the squad, Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema, Gareth Bale, will be ensuring that everyone else in that team is playing and working at the level required for success. And the thing that I tweeted and noticed and thought about while I was watching the Everton game is which players in this Manchester United squad are genuinely 100% safe from any potential clear out, any potential cull this summer. And I think the main five who are safe are Rashford, McTominay, Lindelof, Dalot and De Gea. And then perhaps you have Shaw and Pogba just below, and then perhaps Martial just about in there after signing a new contract. But for a maximum of 8 players out of a squad of 25 to be safe from a deadwood clear out shows just how low the quality is. And I'm not saying all the others should be sold, but they all could go, and you would neither be surprised nor particularly upset. Alexis, Mata, Herrera, Valencia, Young, Darmian, Smalling, Jones, Rojo, Lukaku, Lingard, Matic, Fred. I like a lot of these players. I like them a lot. Not all of them. But they could all be sold if the manager wanted them to be gone, and no one would really have any big complaints.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And that goes to show everything that's wrong with our team at the moment. We don't have enough players who are players that you want in a title-winning squad. Put it that way. You look through Manchester City's squad, even Liverpool's squad, and you know, Man City's squad is something we've never seen the likes of before. So maybe that's an unfair comparison. But even look at Liverpool's squad. Liverpool in every position have at least one player who can come in and do at least a decent job of replacing the starters. In a lot of our positions, we don't even have starters who are capable of doing a decent job in their position, let alone then having, you know, 1, 2, 3 players deep on the bench who can also come in and do a job. You know, just look at today. We've had Luke Shaw suspended for both the game in midweek against Barca and today against Everton. And what do we have to do? We have to play Victor Lindelof as right back, because in both of those games, we just don't have the personnel to come in and do a decent enough job. So then we end up having the calamitous centre-back duo of Jones and Smalling playing again, neither of whom should still be at the club, even though we've just handed Jones another new contract. You know, it's just so many errors that keep piling up from the club, and it's at every single level, you know, from right down to the players on the pitch, and then, you know, take a bit of a step further back into the coaching staff and the managerial staff. But then if you're looking at it from the big picture, it is both those two layers plus everything that goes on in the board. You know, there's no point us sitting here and trying to pin the blame on, you know, just one player or just the players or just the coaching staff or just the board. At the end of the day, and this is a sad, sad indictment of where we are as a football club at the moment, every single part of Manchester United is rotten at the moment. It is rotten and it needs to be fixed.
I just want to pick up on the Lindelof point. And this is where I think and have some worries about Solskjaer, who is saying the right things in his press conferences and said the right thing after the Everton loss, which is saying, he said, I'm going to be successful here, and there are some players in that dressing room who will not be part of that successful team. Perfect thing to say. Now you have to hope he carries that out. And the thing with playing Lindelof at right back is, why are we playing our best centre back at right back to accommodate two of our worst centre backs? Lindelof's presence prevented our build-up from the back being so stodgy and lethargic when he was playing at centre-back and when he was in really good form over December, January and February. And when he's at right-back and not in defence, the midfield is shambolic, because you've got Jones and Small in there who can't play out for anything. and always seem to fail or make the task harder than it should be. And that's where I worry, because yes, it's made slightly harder by the suspension of Luke Shaw, but Solskjaer's got to be ruthless and got to say, no, you know what, I'm not going to play Smalling and Jones. I'm going to play Lindelof and one of Smalling and Jones there, and I'm going to bring someone out from the under-23s, the under-18s, to play at right back or left back. That's what you've got to do. You've got to send a message before we get to this summer saying, look, if you're not good enough, I'm not going to play you.
And it's also about building for the future as well. As much as we have a lot still to play for this season, I think most of us would be far happier saying, okay, you know what, realistically, the end of this season is less important than what happens in the next two or three seasons. So in light of that, I'm not going to move Victor Lindelof from his position because he is the future of this club at centre-back, at least in one of the centre-back positions. So I'm not going to move him at all. It is more important that Lindelof has more game time and gets more experience being a Manchester United centre-back than it is shifting him out to right-back so that, you know, maybe we don't have to promote an inexperienced academy player. For me, we have to, at this point, be thinking and be wary of the fact that although the rest of this season is very important, the next 2 to 3 years are really what's going to define the path of this football club moving forward. And so for me, what we're doing right now should be with those next 2 or 3 years in mind. And playing Lindelof at right back, a position where he has no future and shouldn't really have a present, that it just makes no sense to me. All we're doing is just thinking about the short term again. And it's what we've been doing for the last 3, 4, 5 years. It's just constantly short term thinking. And we need to be thinking about the longer term. We have to be looking forward and thinking about, you know, what's going to happen when next season, you know, we're in a similar position. And what if Lindelof is having to play right back for 5 months if someone gets, you know, an awful injury? You know, it just shows our lack of squad depth, which is all down to the board not bringing in the right players, the fact that we haven't been improving players that we've bought for the last 3 or 4 years under Mourinho. The Everton game, I think, as awful as it is now, I hope that in a couple of years, we might be able to look back at this Everton game as something of a watershed, because there have been some unacceptable results. Every bad result is unacceptable at Manchester United. We know that. But this result was maybe the worst I can remember as a United fan. We've had bad results before. You know, the City 6-1 springs to mind. You know, we've been humbled in the Champions League before. We've had some awful, awful performances under Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho. But this was up there with the worst I can remember. And the only thing that I can hope that comes out from it is that the board, the players and the coaching staff all kind of get their head out of their arses and realise what is going on at this football club and just the scale of what needs to change over the next few months.
To be seen as, or you would hope it has forced a change in the minds of Ed Woodward and the Glazers, and even in Solskjaer, who will have to learn from this and learn what is required this summer. And I saw someone say that, look, it's better that this run is happening at the end of this season rather than the start of next one. It's a chance for Solskjaer to learn from the mistakes that he has made and to learn which players need to go and which players can stay and who has the right attitude. So in that way, that is a silver lining. And the other silver lining is that, yeah, hopefully this forces this and the Barcelona game, because the Barcelona game showed how far away we are from the European elite. This Everton game showed how terrible we truly can be and the attitude of some of the players in the side. And hopefully that shows those two games together, Woodward, that a proper clear out needs to be done, because I think that's what Jose Mourinho wanted at Manchester United. And for all of his faults and how boring it was and the toxic environment that he created, he had some correct points about the way that the club was run and what the club needed to get back to winning ways, because let's not forget that Mourinho is a fantastic manager. It didn't work as well as it should have done. He wasn't as good as he should have been at Manchester United, but he had some of the right points that the board were not backing him to the correct amount, that the structure in place is not good enough, and that the squad had players who had terrible attitudes and needed a boot up the arse. And that's what Solskjaer now has to carry on, is that idea, but while playing better football and stopping not being so grumpy. He has to be ruthless, and I still trust him to make a good go at it after pre-season, because it's irrelevant of signings, even though they are also vital. Because the game against Everton, we ran 8 kilometres less than Everton, and this is the main point: the team is not ready for Solskjaer's style of play. And so while he deserves some criticism for this run, undoubtedly, because some tactics have been off, you clearly can't clear him of any criticism, but he needs a pre-season, not just to sign players and sell players, but to get these players fit enough. Because the Liverpool game, when we had 3 injuries in the first half, 3 or 4, and United got 8 injuries or something within the space of a week, that's when things started to fall off, even though we then had PSG after that. And it's because the players are not fit enough. Before then, we had this high intensity defending, attacking, the whole team full of energy, and it was paying off. He's got to go with that next season. He can't change it. He's got to make them fit enough in pre-season. And then whoever we sign, whoever we sell, then it should be better next season for the whole campaign.
Yeah, it reminds me of when Pochettino first got to Spurs, and he said that pretty much every single one of his training sessions for the first month or two of being at Spurs was just focused on fitness, because they weren't fit enough to play his style of football. And I think we are seeing some of those effects, like you said, with the injury trouble that we had. And now just players seem massively lethargic, even though Solskjaer has actually been rotating the team quite a lot in the last month or so. So yeah, I do agree that will have a big impact on things. I think any calls to sack Solskjaer are just reactionary kind of toss, honestly. It's just not really worth even considering at this point. That would just be yet more short-term thinking from the club. And at this point, none of the top targets that we had in mind were available, the top two being Zidane and Pochettino. Zidane has obviously gone back to Real Madrid. Pochettino, having just got Spurs to the Champions League semi-final, looks like he is in no position to be wanting to leave anytime soon. Not to mention the extortionate amount of money that Daniel Levy would require us to pay to get Pochettino anyway. And so any calls to sack Solskjaer are just ridiculous. What we need to get back to now is working on the basics, making sure that going into the end of the season, we actually get some positivity back into this football club. I don't think we're going to make top four at this point, although because of Spurs and Arsenal both losing this weekend, we aren't out of it yet. Anyway, we'll see what happens this week against City and Chelsea. But even if top four doesn't come to fruition, we have to get some positive feeling back into the club, because that was the major difference after Mourinho left. And it's why you saw the brilliant away fans today at Goodison still chanting Ollie's name the whole way through the game, even at 4-0 down, because that feeling is still kind of lingering. But the longer this goes on, the harder it's going to be to maintain. And we saw that United fans probably stuck with Mourinho for longer than fan bases of most other clubs would. But there comes a point, no matter who you are, where the fans will eventually start turning on you, for right or wrong. And I think Solskjaer has a much longer leash than any other manager would at the club at this point. But there will come a time when that positivity goes too far the other way and we start slipping back into the kind of toxic scenario that we're in under Mourinho. Like I said, the only positive that can come out of this is hopefully a shift in attitude. And from what Solskjaer was saying after the game, I can sense a slight shift in his mindset, almost that he's got very bullish. You know, I am going to be successful here. And he's kind of acknowledging, and almost now he's saying, well, I've got the job permanently, so I can come out and say some of these players won't be here and I still will.
Yeah, you've kind of answered a question we got on Twitter from at @redcurtain, who said, if we fail to win our next two games, we would have 2 wins and 11, possibly 9 losses. Surely any big club sacks a manager after such a run. And reading that, I kind of thought, well, maybe we are too sentimental and cautious, because Real Madrid and Barcelona would, possibly Bayern, Chelsea, United wouldn't. United, I don't think, ever will. And I think it's a good thing most of the time. But in terms of actual success, yeah, we'd probably win more by following their lead. But this is a special case. The manager's come in halfway through the season after shambles. It's Solskjaer. I wouldn't sack him, no way. I'm not saying I would. But I do get the point that other clubs probably would and probably would have more success because of it. He also said, does Ollie start next season under pressure if or when this run continues? I think Manchester United managers are always under pressure, so it's kind of irrelevant about this run. And because this run has already happened, I think he will start under pressure. Whether it continues or not, there's no doubt about that. There will be huge attention on Manchester United's summer activity. So, he'll start next season under enormous pressure. There's no doubt about that. We had a Norwegian tweet in. Bjorn Lagord said it's too early to sack Ole and thinks top four could still happen, even though it may involve us handing the title to Liverpool. I'm not saying we should sack Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I don't think that at all. I understand the point about other clubs. Other clubs would do it. We should wrap up soon enough. But I guess the thing is, I've never seen a United side show such a woeful response, having committed to such a spineless defeat in a previous game. We were booted out of the Champions League mercilessly by Barcelona in midweek, and then show absolutely nothing and concede four at the weekend in the Premier League with no lessons learnt. We gave Messi and Coutinho too much space to shoot against Barcelona, and then on Sunday it was Gylfi Sigurdsson who we gave too much space to. So the spineless nature of the defeat is so gutting and disappointing. But we should move on. So anything final to say before the youth loan and women's roundup, as Manchester United women's bring much more positivity than the men's team?
No, just to kind of add on to what you were just saying there about how spineless it was. I mean, there's no point going on about it for that long. But yeah, just to say it, we just aren't learning the lessons at the moment. Pretty much exactly the same things that caught us out against Barcelona, caught us out against Everton as well. And that's quite a sad thing to have to say. And that is what frustrates people the most. I understand that players and even managers go through periods of bad form. It happens. What annoys me is when you're making the same mistake every single week and you're just not learning from it. You know, there have been plenty of times, even under Sir Alex, when we were in bad form and we went through periods where we were putting in bad performances and getting bad results. But the one thing you can't accept is being as spineless as we've been against both Barca and Everton. And after those performances, you know, that is what frustrates me the most. It's just how the lack of fight and the lack of spirit that we showed to even try and mount any kind of comeback in either of those games. Now, before we move on to looking ahead to the Manchester Derby on Wednesday, let's look back on what has actually been a brilliant week for United's other teams, as both the women's team, the under-18s and the under-23s all tasted success. First, let's start with the under-23s, who had a great week thrashing Newcastle 5-0 last Monday. Mason Greenwood in particular grabbed headlines with a wonderful free kick, that free kick being just one of the five goals scored by United as they continued their good form in the under-23s. To the under-18s, who have played twice since the last time I spoke to you, there was a 2-2 draw against Man City last week, and then this past weekend, a 2-1 victory against Derby County. But the biggest news this week comes from United's women's team, as they finished their first season back as champions of their division, winning promotion to the Women's Super League for next season after thrashing Crystal Palace 7-0. It was a fitting way to end what has been a triumphant return for United's women's side, and next season they will be competing back in the highest level of the women's game. All they have to do now is apply for a license to meet the requirements of being a Women's Super League side. According to the BBC, there doesn't seem to be any issues with that license, and there's even been some talks to see whether the women's side could play at Old Trafford next season as well. Whether that will be just for an odd game here or there, or for the entire season, remains to be seen. But whatever happens, as long as they do manage to get promoted and play in the Women's Super League next season, that will represent a brilliant, brilliant triumph for the women's side, coming back into the game after 13 years out and winning not only promotion, but winning their division in their very first season back. Congratulations to Casey Stoner and everyone in the women's team. It's a truly fantastic achievement, and I can't wait to see what they might do next season back in the Women's Super League.
Right, Manchester City on Wednesday. Could not be worse timing. Seven goals conceded without reply in our last two games. Now we got City and then Chelsea coming up soon after. It's funny because people are saying, do we want to win or lose against City? I don't think there's much choice in that question. Given our current displays, I think City could absolutely trounce us. But at the same time, I have this quiet confidence, or not confidence, but it would strike me as so classic of Mourinho's side, of Van Gaal's side, and of Solskjaer's side, to be fair, to put in these two terrible performances and then play fantastically against City and manage a win. I don't think I can't be bothered to talk about whether we should want to win or not. United should always want to win all their games, no matter what the connotations are. I would rather City won the league than Liverpool, but that doesn't stop me wanting to beat City, because to stop City from their charge towards the title would be fantastic. So I don't want to talk about that. But prediction for the game and how things might pan out.
I think it'll be very cagey. City looked nervous against Spurs, and even once they scored the first goal, I thought they were going to just tear Spurs open. I thought Spurs would have nothing left after midweek. But City looked pretty nervy at the Etihad. And it was actually a good noise, and you could kind of see the fans were sort of willing the team forward. So I think City are going to be, it's going to be a pretty cagey game with City not trying to hang on, but not trying to lose the game too quickly. I think one of the biggest things to see will be the atmosphere at Old Trafford, because it's probably one of the strangest derbies I can remember because of the situation that both teams are in. It's going to be a weird one where a United loss would actually probably not displease us as much as it would normally. Obviously, we always hate losing to City, and I'm with you that no matter what's going on with their season, I'm not going into a derby saying that I want us to lose at all. Our season is more important than theirs, frankly, at the end of the day. But it's going to be a very weird atmosphere because we're coming off such terrible form in what would normally create a very sort of, I hate just using the word toxic over and over again, I feel that's all we've said in this episode, but would normally create a very toxic atmosphere. Then layered on top of that, you've got a game against one of our biggest rivals as they're going for the title, but in a situation where some of the fans in the stadium probably are actively supporting our rivals in going for the title. So it's just kind of a bizarre situation. So the atmosphere should be very interesting. I would be very surprised to see us win the game, but like you said, I feel like it would be kind of typical of everything that's happened over the last few years for us to just be our massively inconsistent selves once again and put in a brilliant performance against City and win 3-0 or something. So honestly, pretty much no point asking me for a prediction on the game because I've got no idea. Basically,
I can't see a 3-0. Yeah, I could see us scraping a victory in not an emphatic start, but I definitely cannot see us keeping Manchester City out. And you know what will happen is Sergio Aguero will score a long shot in the same way that Messi did, Coutinho did, Sigurdsson did, Dinia did when they were given time outside of the box criminally. That's my one prediction, even if I think City will win 3-1, including an Aguero long shot when we just dick about and give him far too much space outside the box. I think Raheem Sterling will probably score as well. That would be typical when he is playing ridiculously well and is probably... Yeah, but he's strangely, he the ex-Liverpool and now City players, I think, liked by a lot of Manchester United support for what he's doing off the pitch, which is a strange one, but we certainly won't be thinking that on Wednesday night. So not much positivity going into Wednesday, not much positivity going into the rest of the season, and not really into summer either. United need some good signings. United need a very, very hard pre-season to get them ready for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's style of play. He shouldn't be sacked. He doesn't deserve all the blame. He's got the backing. You saw it at the end of the Everton game. United just lost off 4-0, and Solskjaer goes over to thank the fans for their support, and they're still chanting his name. There's a reason for that, and that's because I think most Manchester United fans, or particularly the match-going fans, believe that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can do well here, can win something at Manchester United, but some extreme changes are needed at the top of the club. For more from Jack throughout the week, you can find him on Twitter at
UTDTaitz, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end, and that's where you can send in any questions for the episode next week. Thank you for listening, as always, to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Back to normal, although my audio quality is a bit less good than normal since I'm in 8,000 miles away from my normal recording place in my house. So thank you for listening to Series 4, Episode 37 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. We'll be back next week, hopefully with something more positive. Cheers for listening. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Original Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.